When we choose love and compassion, we create connection. In my Life and Laughter podcast, we find ways to choose love over fear. I'm your host, Perry Kinder. Hey, Life and Laughter listeners, welcome back to my podcast. I am so excited to be here today. I'm talking to Jen Banks, and she's a fellow podcaster, and she does some great things, and I'm excited to talk to her about that. But let me tell you about Jen first. Jen helps women nurture the part of themselves that may have become dormant in motherhood. Like so many things in motherhood becomes dormant, our brains, our ambitions. In her podcast, A is for Adversity, she interviews people who are parents themselves and how they bring more of what lights them up into their parenting journey. As an early childhood educator, Jen not only provides nurturing and learning for young children, but firmly believes that the same nurturing and learning needs to be extended to ourselves alongside it. What an idea. Jen has three boys, ages 5, 3, and 1. Oh my gosh, that's tiring just reading that sentence. She loves to read and bake, and she is fiercely in love with her husband, Jared. Welcome, Jen. How are you today?
Doing so well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. 5, 3, and 1. Why? That's the question is why? Why? Oh.
Right. Yes, it's so true. It took us a little while to get pregnant, and then so subsequently it didn't take as long, and so they're closer than we would have thought.
Very close.
Yeah, I'm just living it up, and I'm maintaining my identity alongside mothering these boys, so I'm living what I teach.
That is so good, and that's so hard. Little kids take up so much of your time and energy, and sometimes you're just spent. Like, the end of the day is like, I'm just going to go to bed and cry for half an hour, and then I'm going to sleep for 3 hours and get up and do it again. It's exhausting. So I love the idea of your podcast that you're helping women kind of navigate their identity through motherhood. So how did that idea for a podcast come about?
Yeah, well, it's kind of evolved over time, but it's interesting to see too along the way how that idea has always been there. I remember being pregnant with my oldest, and suddenly mothers were very relevant to me because I was pregnant. And I just noticed so many women who were empty nesters or even still, you know, raising young kids. And it just seemed like they'd lost who they were. You know, they just had gotten so caught up in motherhood, which is so easy to do, you know, and it is all consuming, but finding a way to still be ourselves alongside that or bring that to the table just makes us a much happier mom and a much better provider to our children.
And I think that the insidious thing about this whole thing is you don't realize you've given up your identity as a person when you become a mother. What are some signs that women can look for that like can give them a warning that they've gone a little bit too far away from who they're supposed to be for themselves?
Yeah, I think one of the main things is waking up in the morning without a little bit of hope, you know, or just feeling like that's all you do is just mothering, you know. I remember somebody asking me like, do you wake up because of your kids or before your kids, or, you know, kind of thinking about that sort of thing. Cause I found if I wake up a little bit before my kids do and just have 5 minutes of peace or, you know, look at the wall time, I feel like I can just start my day refreshed and with a, you know, renewed hope that that's not all I'm good for, you know?
Yeah. Not just the baby washer and the feeder and the fight breaker upper. Yeah. When my girls were little, and I've got 4 daughters, but they were all 4 years apart because it took me 4 years to learn how to like kids again before I wanted to get pregnant. But yeah, I got up about an hour early in the morning. I just had that time to myself, and sometimes it was 5 a.m, but it was either do that or not do that and not have any time for myself throughout the day because their demands are just nonstop. And you do get lost. You get lost in the shuffle of parenting and the daily tasks. And I love how you think about, you know, setting time aside for you to remember who you are. You know, I talk to women myself, and they get to an age where their kids are teenagers, and it's like, I have to rediscover who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think that's universal. I think that's a really hard concept to wrap your mind around. So what are things that you're advising women to do to stay connected to, you know, their passion and their goals and their dreams? Because it seems like it gets put on the back burner for so long.
Yeah. I was talking to one woman and telling her that I put my boys in daycare once a week, you know, and I do teach preschool, but I'm mostly a stay-at-home mom. And she was saying, oh, I wish that that was socially acceptable when I was raising young kids, because there is this sense of, oh, I'm the mother, I have to do it all. I have to be there for them. But there really are choices where you could outsource some of the help, or you could, you know, hire a babysitter for just even a couple hours or whatever you need, so that you do have time to yourself and a margin to explore what you love. And, you know, I don't know who coined the phrase mom guilt, but it seems so very prevalent, you know, and I was looking into that a little bit, and it seems like there's such a vague idea of what motherhood is, and it's different for a lot of people, that then it creates guilt because we're not living up to all these expectations or societal ideas of what motherhood should be. But when we get specific about what we want our motherhood to look like and we focus on that, it gets rid of the guilt and allows more space to explore and do what we want to do. And so I feel like that's one of the main things, is just to mind your own motherhood, is what I've heard, you know, because, you know, inherently we do know what's best for our children. We're their mother for a reason. And once we quiet all that noise, then I feel like we can be ourselves again.
Yeah. I think the idea that we pursue our own passions and desires sends a definite message to our children. What do you think that tells them?
Yeah, I think it shows that we're, you know, still reaching goals. We're still working hard and achieving what we want to bring to life. And also just, you know, showing them that they can explore their passions and their interests and dreams too.
I think especially for our daughters that, you know, motherhood isn't the end all. This isn't the life's goal. It's just part of the journey. You know, you're going to be a mother along the way. And at the end of that, you're going to have to come back to yourself, and whether you're 40 or 50 or maybe 80, remember that you're a human being and that you have your own desires, and not to feel guilty about wanting to pursue those when your kids are little.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. I have daughters who have little kids, and you know, I feel their stress and their overwhelm, and it's hard to watch. I mean, even though I've been there, it's hard to watch. How do you know when you've reached your breaking point? What are some signs that, you know, I need to do something today because I'm not going to make it throughout this the rest of the day?
Yeah. So I had mentioned a little bit ago, just I like time to stare at the wall, even if it is just 5 minutes, because I feel like once you notice that your head is just so full of all the things, you know, I feel like if you don't even have time to think or reflect or journal even, I feel like that's a sign that there's probably too much going on or too much that's consuming your brain power. And so if you're not feeling like you're getting rejuvenated, then finding something that rejuvenates you. For me, it's connecting with other women or being productive or doing sorts of hands-on things. I'm a doer. And I find that that rejuvenates me. I don't find that I need rest beyond that, but I do love to read books or bake or things that are a little bit more downtime required. And so I feel like that's the key, is finding what lights you up and then doing more of that so that you do feel rejuvenated at the end of each day instead of exhausted and depleted.
Right. No, in my generation, I think there was so much expectation of what it meant to be a mother. It was almost a badge of honor to be, you know, doing all the things, heading all the committees, being, you know, at the last thread of your sanity all the time. And that was a badge that, wow, you were doing it right. And we know now that that is complete, you know, utter crap, because if you're doing that, then you're not doing it right. You're not enjoying your life. You're not teaching your kids anything good. But how do we get past, you mentioned the mom guilt. What are some steps we can take? Because we say, you know, get past the guilt, but that's a lot easier said than done. Because a lot of societal pressure, maybe our family pressure, maybe our partner's expectations, you know, how do you manage all of that without absorbing all of that guilt for wanting to do what you want to do?
Yeah. That's a great question. And I feel like it kind of comes and goes in seasons too. You can find what works for your season, and some might be busier than others, but I feel like one thing that's helped me is leaning into my strengths. So if I can figure out what my strengths are outside of motherhood and bring that into motherhood, then that helps me feel fulfilled and not as guilty in motherhood because I'm doing what I am naturally good at and also just, you know, what might be the best for my children. I love to be organized and, you know, practical and systemized. And so I feel like as I've brought that into motherhood, I've almost taken on like an office manager role. And so that's kind of what I've almost renamed myself as, just like, yeah, the office manager. And I do love snuggling with my kids and being that nurturing part in the evening and stuff. But I feel like mostly throughout the day, I just, you know, we just have our day planned and we go, and there's time for downtime too, but I feel like that's been one of my strengths and it's helped me to feel happier because I am doing what I am good at. And so again, it just kind of takes away some of the guilt because I'm like, oh, maybe that's best for that mom. And this is what's best for me and my family right now.
I love that. I love the term office manager instead of mother. I mean, when you say mother, it becomes very isolating. Like, this is my job. When you say office manager, you're managing the whole family. You're managing the team. This is how we work together to make this work. I love that reframing from mother to office manager because it's, yeah, like you're not in it alone. Like you have people to manage. You have somebody maybe managing you, maybe managing each other. And getting the spouse or the partner involved, which is a huge part of this. If you're lucky enough to have a spouse or a partner helping you, you know, there's a lot of single mothers that are doing it themselves. It's just, oh, you know, hats off to them. It's so tough. How do you engage your partner in a way that makes you feel like you're not begging for help or bribing them to help, that they actually want to be engaged in child rearing their own children, which again, revolutionary.
Yes, right. Well, I learned from a friend the phrase, voice your desires in a way that inspires. And so we don't nag or we don't, you know, beg them for help, but it's just more voicing, oh, I would love if this kitchen was clean, you know, or I would love if we all were watching a movie together tonight, you know? And so just voicing it that way kind of ignites the hero gene is what they call it. And so the men just like want to make their women happy. They want to make their family happy and they'll just, you know, jump at that chance. But, and also removing expectations. I feel like that's been the main lesson I've learned. You know, if I don't have an expectation, then I'm not disappointed. If I have a certain expectation, then it's his choice to fulfill it or not. And also giving him grace, just like I've given myself grace. I'm the mother that my children need, and he's also the father that my children need. So the things that he brings to the table might be different than what I bring to the table. And we work as a team, like you said. And I had heard that term from someone, and it's called job crafting. And I really like it because, yeah, the term mother is so broad. It is so vague. So if you can give yourself a title that, you know, resonates more with you, then that might also remove some of the guilt. Because I've also heard some people say they're the core value instiller, or they're the early childhood educator, or, you know, whatever lights you up, that would be what you can bring to motherhood.
I love that. I love giving the title. That really takes a lot of responsibility off your shoulders when it's shared. And, you know, one thing that you said about getting the husbands involved, partners involved, you know, they can't read your mind. I for so long I thought, if he has to see the pile of towels on the couch that's been there for a week, he has to see that I haven't had time to even fold the towels. They don't see it. And then you get resentful because they're not reading your mind. And then that causes more problems. And so you maybe just ask, you know, maybe say, you know, I if you could just fold these towels while I get the kids to bed, that'd be so helpful. And if same thing for the partner, you know, say what you need. Don't expect your partner to read your mind, because that always ends in resentment and fury and usually poison food and jail time. And that never ends well.
Yes.
So you also had this great idea, which I love, about your sunshine community. Tell me about the Sunshine Community idea, which is brilliant.
Yes. So it's also kind of evolved over time, but I feel like the main premise is that our communities have gotten so big. You know, we live in these giant cities and it's easy to feel isolated and lonely. And having a more tight-knit community is so much more helpful. You're able to know where to go for support. You're able to find other women who are mothers just like you, or are wanting to maintain their goals and identity and pursue interests. And so Yeah, I created a community that women can join, and every month I send them a piece of mail, and there's an optional event to attend, and then we're part of like a GroupMe chat. And so it's just a way to really get to know each other on a deeper level so that we do feel like we can reach out when we need it, or again, we can just have that support, because I feel like it's almost crazy to just have one person mothering children. You know, they say it takes a village, and it really does, because that's a lot of work to just have it fall on your shoulders. So as we involve more people, just like they did in ancient societies, I feel like it was more people mothering the children than just the mom.
Yeah. Yeah. You get the aunts involved and the sisters involved and your neighbors involved, and a very communal effort to watch out for each other's kids. And like you said, I think we've turned away from that. I think in the past, you know, 20 years or so, because when I grew up, you know, we couldn't go anywhere without my neighbors telling my mom where we were, what we were doing. We didn't have cell phones at the time, but my mom knew exactly where we were and who we were with. And I think we've really lost that connection to our neighbors, to our communities. And I love the idea of you bringing that back. Several episodes ago, I talked to Lisa Diamond. She did a study here in Utah about women and loneliness and social safety. And she found out that more than half of the women in Utah didn't feel socially safe, meaning they didn't feel like they had someone to turn to if they really were struggling. And that was heartbreaking. I mean, more than half of the women here in the state are lonely. And like you said, that Sunshine Community idea of being there for each other, reaching out, you know, maybe just a phone call, just going for a coffee or a drink or going to lunch or just sitting in the park with your kids. I mean, it takes such little time to connect to each other. And I know you want to create an actual building for something like this. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so it's in the works. My efforts to network have been incredible, because that was what my previous podcast season was about, was community. And so I've just met so many people networking within the South Jordan Daybreak area. And we've formed this council to kind of bring this dream to pass, because it takes a lot of people to make any dream happen. You know, they say, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And so Sarah Elbert, she is the owner of Daybreak Treasures Boutique, and she wants it to be a brick and mortar store. And so it will also be a place for gathering. And that's where I come in, because I love events and I love gathering. And so I had brought the idea to the table to have a child care area so that women could attend the events and have a place for their children to go. And then we met another woman who is a domestic violence attorney, and she wanted it to be a safe space, a place where people could go and get support and help, and also give back to the community, so that some of the proceeds will go back to helping victims of domestic violence and things. And so it's just been beautiful to see it evolve, and we'll be applying for grants and things to help make it a reality. But yeah, it'll be a place where we can go and meet other women, and there will be drinks and a safe place for the kids to play, and kind of a more cozy, homey vibe than just a regular play cafe or McDonald's, you know? So it's a place that should be inviting and welcoming.
Yeah, I spent years of my life in McDonald's play places.
Yes,
years,
right?
There's of my life. Yes. So I like the idea of it being a McDonald's play place, but a place separate for grownups to sit without having to hear the screaming of children and the spilling of root beer all over the place.
For sure.
What are some signs for women? Because we don't realize that we're isolated until we fall apart, really. I mean, we think we're doing it ourselves. We're just being, you know, very stoic, and we're being very on top of things. But in reality, you know, we think we have to do it alone, and we shouldn't do it alone. But what are some signs that women are doing too much by themselves, that maybe they need to get out of their shells, that they need to get out of their homes? And I'm an introvert, very much an introvert, but I can always tell when I need to be around people, that I need to have that connection or that conversation. What are some of the signs that women can look for that they might be becoming too isolated?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like I'm kind of the opposite. I've almost always been an extrovert. And so I feel like that rejuvenates me, you know, being around people. But I did meet a friend who said too that she didn't even realize that she was isolated or alone, you know, and it kind of took other friends almost like bringing her out and reaching out to her. And so I think just looking for women that may, you know, you may see those signs, you know, just tiredness or overwhelmed, or they feel like they can't, or yeah, just self-care is a huge one for sure. I've heard that when your self-care is high, not a lot can bring you down, you know, not a lot can ruffle your feathers. So maybe if you feel like you're quick to anger or resenting your children, or, you know, just you feel like your cup is always empty, then that might be a sign that it needs to be refilled. So I think as long as we work on our self-care and watch out for others who may need that same thing, we'll be taking care of each other.
So when you talk about self-care, what does that mean to you? And why do women have a hard time finding time for self-care?
Yeah. So I also recently heard the term the gold standard of self-care. And so I feel like there's two separate levels of self-care. One is just the basics, your hygiene, your wellness, you know, those physical needs pretty much. And then the gold standard of self-care is more like what lights you up, what rejuvenates you, what makes you feel like you're contributing to the world, what drives you. Those types of things are the gold standard of self-care. And so I've tried to do more of those types of things, you know, what really fills me up, what really aligns with my values and my dreams. And yeah, women do feel guilty about that too, because, you know, I think it comes down to societal programming is the biggest thing, but also just we have this nurturing, mothering instinct and we do love our children, but sometimes I don't think we separate that from, yes, we love them and we care for them, but we also love and care for ourselves. And so just making sure that we're included as we feed our children, we feed ourselves, you know, and the quote that I love is drink as you pour. So we are pouring to all these people, but don't forget to give yourself some of that too. And so, yeah, I think we're just in such a society of comparison that when we see other women, we think that we should or need to do that too. I had looked up this quote and it's by psychotherapist Donald Winnicott. And this was in the 1940s. He said that babies need an ordinary devoted mother. And he wanted to defend ordinary parents against what he saw as a growing interference from professional expertise into the family. He saw all this advice and all of these people. And it really did turn out prophetic because, you know, all our babies need is the ordinary parent, you know, and I feel like most of us are pretty average and that's what they need. And, you know, the babies miss out on all this ordinary goodness when we try and like compare ourselves or be another type of mom.
I love that idea of being an ordinary parent, just doing what you do and loving how you love. And that's good enough. It's good enough. We need to say to ourselves, you know, you're doing good enough. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. And also to normalize the conversations about resentment. You know, sometimes you're going to resent your kids. They can be real dicks. They can be real jerks. And that feeling of maybe taking on that martyr role, you know, noticing when you fall into being a martyr and noticing when you fall into just being angry. And all those things are fine as long as you don't stay there. You know, you can acknowledge, oh, I'm in my martyr phase. I've got to pull myself out of that. But normalizing that everybody feels this way. This isn't, you're not a horrible person for not liking your kids sometimes. Because sometimes you're not going to like them. Sometimes they're just not nice.
Right.
But you
it's
still,
so true.
Yeah, but you still love them. You still love them dearly. And learning that feeling that way is normal, I think, takes so much guilt off of a mother to realize they don't have to be this, you know, gushing Disney princess all the time, full of love and rainbows. But sometimes motherhood is ugly. You know, it's just ugly and it's sad. It's depressing. But yes, the majority of the time, it's not. A lot of the time, when you let yourself just be in the moment and laugh at their mistakes and laugh at yourself, it changes the way you feel about the situation. Do you find that to be true?
Yes, I do. My husband, he is the comic relief in our family. And it's true. I feel like once you can laugh about it, then
yes,
you know, it lightens the mood. And I love what you said about normalizing it. And I think it just takes awareness, you know, just being aware of the reality of the things and accepting it and working with it. My thought came back. It was just that I felt guilty for a while that I didn't love motherhood because I am a mom and I'm a woman and shouldn't I love motherhood, you know, but it's like, I love my children, but I don't always love motherhood. And even just the permission to say that is huge. You know, you don't have to love being a mother, but you know, we do it and we find what lights us up alongside it. And, you know, it doesn't have to be everything is motherhood. You know, you can step out of that role sometimes, even though it feels all consuming and all taking over.
Yeah. And I know that having women be involved in continual learning and growing and progressing is a huge way to keep their identity. What are some ways that you see women doing that?
Yeah. So I feel like I heard about generativity and stagnation when I was taking psychology classes. And I feel like that kind of is almost a developmental stage. And then also it just is innate within us that we want to leave our mark. We want to feel like we've contributed to the world. And so things like mentoring or making commitments with other people that fulfills that need for us. And when we don't do that, the effects of stagnation are that we have reduced cognitive function. We have, our health gets worse. We don't have as good of relationships and we're not as happy with our life. So I feel like beyond that, you know, we just reaching our goals will keep us in that generativity and feeling like we did make a difference. Cause I feel like some women, they're in their sphere of influence, which is their family, but reaching beyond that can further drive that need. And like you said, continual learning and just progress and growth that can help that. And then also be an example to our kids, which we were talking about earlier. And then we're not at a loss when we have an emptiness. We've kept our identity and our passions along the way.
Yeah. And I think it's important to share those goals with somebody. Because you keep them secret, it's almost like you're living a double life. Like, this is who I'm going to be in 20 years when I emerge from this cocoon of motherhood. I'm going to blossom into this butterfly. But you have to have somebody keeping you on task. Like, what are you doing to make sure that you continue, you know, if you want to get a degree, maybe you want to graduate from college or you want to study art. You know, maybe having an accountability partner checking in with you, even monthly, like, how's your goal? You know, I know you in 10 years, you want to do this. What are you doing on it today? And to kind of check in with your friends or your spouse or your family members to have them make sure that you're still doing that, because that does keep you from falling back into that stagnation where, oh, you know, I'm too tired to do it today. Today's just been too long. It's just, I have no energy. If you know you're going to check in with somebody, I think it makes you at least make a little bit, even if it's just checking out a book from the library about the topic that you want to learn.
Yeah,
you don't have to take a college class. You just read a book or watch a YouTube video. I mean, anything that keeps you connected to your passion. What other ideas do you have to help women stay moving forward without dropping back? Because it's so easy to stop. Because it's tiring. Motherhood is tiring.
Yeah. That is a good question. While I think about that, I'll share this too. I feel like people almost want permission to pivot as well, because they're like, oh, I went to school for this. Let me stay in this because that's what I was going to be when I grew up, you know. But I was an elementary school teacher and I pivoted, and now I teach preschool in my home, and I foresee myself pivoting again and leaving, you know, that entirely. But, you know, some people are afraid of that because, you know, again, the cost or what have you. But like you said, even just checking out a book, those little teeny steps towards what you want is a huge thing. I would have majored in business had I known what I like now, but you know, that was a different part of me and this is me now. And so, yeah, just getting out, exploring things, finding out what your interests are. That's a huge way to do it. Joining an interest group or type of thing that, you know, you can find other like-minded women who are interested in what you're interested in, could be your accountability partner. Doing what your kids are interested in too, maybe, or if your kids are taking music lessons, why not take music lessons yourself? I feel like, again, there's that stigma sometimes that older people can't start something new, but you totally can. You could join a dance class. You could join a piano recital and it would be fine.
Yeah. I taught piano for a while, and I had several adult students, and they went to the recitals. They performed in the recital. They hated it, but they did it. And I was so proud that they were learning something along with their kids, which I thought was a lot of fun.
Yes. Yeah. So great.
So how can people find you and be part of your podcast and your community? What steps do they need to take to do that?
Yeah. So my podcast is A is for Adversity, and my website is the same, aisforadversity.com. I'm on Instagram at A is for Adversity. And on my website is where you can join the Sunshine community. And it's $10 a month. And again, I over deliver, and it would, you know, be so incredible for your mental health to just have these like-minded women, and it's already curated for you. You don't have to go out and find a community. It's just right there.
I love that. That's very good. And now I just lost my train of thought listening to that. It's train of thought day.
Yes.
I don't know. I just left the station. I don't know. Oh, what have you learned in your podcast over the past 3 years? How have your attitudes changed either about motherhood or about women or life in general over the past 3 years? As you've talked to people and shared your wisdom?
Yes. So I feel like I became awake or aware about 10 years ago. And that's when I was introduced to life coaching. And so I feel like I had 3 life coach friends over the years. And that's kind of what sparked all of my podcasting dreams. I had listened to Jody Moore, who's a life coach. And so my first season was about living intentionally. And then I moved through storytelling and empowerment and relationships and community. And then next season, it'll be about identity and just maintaining that identity throughout motherhood. I feel like I've learned so much from the people that I've talked to, especially how challenges refine our character, which has been a huge theme throughout my podcast, because it is A is for adversity. And just, we're so much more resilient and compassionate and stronger at the other side of our challenges. And motherhood is a huge challenge, a huge journey, but we learn so much through it that it couldn't be learned any other way. And so I wouldn't pray for it, but I wouldn't trade it either. So.
Right. Yes. And we do learn so much about ourselves, and we raise these little children who just love us, and we get to help shape their future, which is, you know, your kids never turn out the way you think they're going to. I mean, they're their own little person, and to learn how to love that person, no matter who they decide to be and what they decide to do, it's such a joyous journey. There's really a lot of joy in motherhood, which we also don't talk about a lot. We talk about the trials and the misery, but there is a lot of joy and a lot of love and a lot of kindness. And you watch your kids become these human beings that just, and they go out into the world with their own powers and their own talents. And it's just, it's mind blowing.
So true. I agree fully. That was a great tie-in because, we do forget the joy in motherhood because there is a lot.
Yeah. We have to keep reminding ourselves there is joy. There is joy. Yeah. And there's also joy watching your own kids become mothers or parents, because that's, you just kind of sit back and say, I've been there. I feel your pain.
Circle of life. Yes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jen. You're brilliant. I love your ideas. Everybody should check out your podcast and your community and spread the word, because I think you're going to change the world. So thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Perry. I appreciate being on, and I love your vision of moving past fear and onto love.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for listening, everybody. Have a wonderful day, and we will talk to you soon.
To continue your journey toward love and connection, follow me at Life and Laughter Coaching on Instagram and Facebook.